Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. Recently, one of our advisory board members, Dr. Sonia T. Osqui, Vice President of Biosimilars at Cardinal Health, wrote an opinion piece on the status of ophthalmology medications and the potential for ophthalmology biosimilars. We spoke with her to learn more about this topic and her opinions on what needs to be done to accelerate biosimilar use in this growing therapeutic area. To start us off, Dr. Osqui, why are ophthalmology biosimilars important to watch?
Ophthalmology really represents the next big therapeutic area in which biosimilars can make an impact. So far we've experienced biosimilars in rheumatology and oncology, and we're anticipated to have our first true insulin biosimilar as designated from a regulatory standpoint this summer. So with the filing of Samsung and Biogen's SB11 ranibizumab biosimilar last fall, ophthalmology is really lined up to be the next key therapeutic area to experience biosimilars. And why this is important is that the biosimilars in the pipeline for ophthalmology indications are for some of the most common treatment options for neovascular age-related macular degeneration, which is the leading cause of blindness in people age 60 and older. And the prevalence of AMD continues to increase due to the aging population. And currently, the treatment for AMD is associated with significant economic burden in the U.S. and, quite frankly, globally. So by having biosimilars in the pipeline for some of the most common treatment options, you'll thereby increase competition and lower costs and aim to ease some of the economic burden associated with these treatment options.
How much do we know about physicians' use of biosimilars in ophthalmology?
Currently, there are no biosimilars approved with ophthalmology indications, so we really don't have much insights into how physicians are even anticipating to use biosimilars. So this is what really triggered the initiation of our Cardinal Health Initiative and research in this space. We know from our experience with the other biosimilars in oncology and rheumatology, for example, that education is instrumental to successful biosimilar adoption and utilization. So we want to gather early insights into the attitudes, knowledge, and beliefs regarding biosimilars from the lens of ophthalmologists and specifically retina specialists, so we could better understand the gaps and needs to help prepare the market for the first ophthalmology biosimilar.
In your contributor piece, you mentioned the Cardinal Health Survey. Can you tell us a bit about the results and what that means for ophthalmology biosimilars in the clinical setting?
Absolutely. So first, I'll note that this survey is still ongoing, so we're continuing to gather data and responses to further develop robust insights, but we wanted to share these interim findings to get the conversation going as soon as possible. One of the key early findings was the lack of familiarity of biosimilars amongst providers. So 55% of respondents said that they were somewhat familiar with biosimilars, and then 31% said that they were not very familiar. Additionally, 63% of the respondents noted that they had little knowledge of the FDA approval pathway of biologics. So these responses were really humbling reminders that there is a significant need for education for providers in this space, again, in preparation for the first biosimilar to become available. In fact, 70% of physician respondents said that educational information about safety, efficacy, and performance would help them achieve a greater understanding of biosimilars. So we know the desire and the recognition of the need for education is there amongst providers as well. The other key finding that I'll share was when we asked what the primary concern would be with prescribing an ophthalmology biosimilar, 43% responded that they would be uncomfortable from a clinical standpoint, and 35% responded that they had payer coverage concerns. So again, this is tying back to that need for education to help develop early clinical confidence in these agents, but also have that multi-stakeholder engagement to include payers to have these discussions early on what type of impact this would have on their formulary decisions and the type of information they would need to make their decisions as well.
Also in your writing, you explained that reference bevacizumab is sometimes used to treat age-related macular degeneration off-label and has been for several years. Are you aware of any efforts to expand indications for bevacizumab products to officially include ophthalmology conditions?
Yeah, it's a good question. So bevacizumab is commonly used. It's one of the most commonly used treatment agents for AMD that's used off-label, and it's been used this way for many years now, and really due to its low cost and studied efficacy. What's really interesting about this space and this dynamic is that there's also an intravitreal bevacizumab formulation by Outlook Therapeutics that's a phase 3 trial for on-label ophthalmology indications. So this is being developed under an originator BLA pathway, which means it's not going to be a biosimilar. So if we have an on-label bevacizumab enter the market, this could essentially inhibit or restrict the current practice of off-label compounding of Avastin. So it's yet to be known what kind of impact this will have on the economics of bevacizumab use in ophthalmology, given today's low cost of the off-label use. But again, here is where potential biosimilar competition for the other anti-VEGF agents could serve as tools to help lower costs for those agents in the needs for AMD.
What do you think needs to be done to encourage more biosimilar use in the ophthalmology setting?
This response will probably not be a shocker to anybody, but I would say education. So we definitely have learned through our experience with oncology and rheumatology that education is key. And in fact, we're still having quite a bit of educational efforts in those spaces, despite having products on the market for several years now in some cases. So the time to have these types of conversations and educational programs and efforts is really now. And we want to make sure that all the stakeholders are well equipped to evaluate and adopt these biosimilars once they become available. So this includes not just providers and payers, like I mentioned earlier, but also administrators and, of course, patients. We need to make sure prior to the launch of the first product, there is a sense of clinical confidence and understanding the regulatory approval pathway, what the terms mean, why we might not see robust phase 3 clinical trials and why it's okay and they may not be needed for the approval for biosimilars. So I think that's going to be instrumental in the success in ophthalmology.
Do you have any other concluding thoughts?
The ophthalmology space, as with many other therapeutic areas, is rapidly evolving. So innovations continue to be made in treatment options, not only in drugs that have extended dosing intervals, but even novel port delivery systems. So there continues to be advancement in this space. So the entrance of biosimilars for some of the most commonly used treatment options in AMD could ultimately help enhance access to safe and effective treatment options and alleviate some of the financial burden associated with treatment of retinal conditions that we have today.
Well, Dr. Osqui, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.